Adventures, Tales. Music by Casket Bound.
Hello, welcome to Grim Tales. I'm here again with Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, everybody.
Have you got anything new on at the moment? Any projects you want to share with the pros?
Just watching all the altcoins go boom and booyah and down up. It's a hypnotizing graph.
There's so many now, aren't there? This bubble's got to burst at some point, hasn't it?
I have never seen so many altcoins in my life. It is just, you go to Uniswap, you've got like poo coin, piss coin, anal coin, fuck coin, whore coin, tit coin, and then you've got like all the other coins with names like Polygon and Polymath and Polycule. It's, oh my god, that's a lot of coins. A lot of altcoins.
Yeah. Barter's a lot less trouble, I think.
I think it's kind of fun, though. I mean, just like the way the financial system is completely collapsed and everybody who's on Coinbase or Uniswap, if you can't get on Coinbase, you can go on Uniswap and then you can get your coin up there. If Coinbase won't accept you, you know, you get different layers. Like, everybody's going to have their own coin. Within like a year, it's gonna be like a new selfie. You're gonna be like James Coin, I'm gonna be Rachel Coin, we're gonna have like named coin, we're all gonna be coins, we're all tokens, human tokens.
We worked on that project, didn't we? Barteriza.
Oh yeah, Barteriza.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. That Seth guy, he was so innocent and naive and such a good-hearted guy and a cruel world.
Yeah, it was a really good idea. It was basically electronic barter, so you trade whatever you're good at.
I liked it.
I don't know how he's getting on. Maybe he found someone else to invest in it.
It was like too pure-hearted. He wanted to barter everything, you know, like people trading skills. Like for anybody who hasn't heard this story.
Yeah.
He wanted to have people trade teaching language for learning how to paint, playing musical instruments for groceries. It was just like a really kind-hearted bartering system that he had done, I think, in Indiegogo for, you know, so people could just trade whatever they wanted, whether it was goods or skills or services, you know, things. And it was almost like, I don't know, I just think society was too corrupt to really like interface with the project, but it was a good idea.
It was a really lovely, wonderful idea. I really wish it had worked out. So his idea was basically you could trade your time for someone else's time, or you could even have your own coins, essentially, like what you're saying, that you could trade through the site with other people and so on. But it was a wonderful idea. It's just a shame it didn't take off. It's a far more human face to all this kind of Bitcoin stuff, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think it depends on where you're coming from. I mean, like seeing mass scale tokenization on a society shows a fracturing of the mainstream financial system, and you have these new actors coming in and replacing the old actors. There's a lot of security theater, but there is a lot of, well, I mean, you can't inherit crypto, you know? Like, you don't have, like, my parents and their grandparents were Bitcoin millionaires. You don't have that. So it is a more even playing field. It's less, you know, monarchistic in that way. I think that's good. I don't like inherited money. I think crypto is a lot cleaner than that. It's got its scams and it's very, very annoying in a lot of ways. And it's like, holy shit, does it ever end, right?
Yeah.
But there's no inherited crypto.
It doesn't have the corruption of old money. It has the corruption of new money. So change is as good as a rest, as they say. For me, it's just, it's not useful for anything until it's useful for something.
Interesting take about a guy who was saying that people in countries where people kept having their currency inflated, that they were using Bitcoin to maintain their own financial security, you know, because anybody's government can just like come in and like insanely inflate, you know, your national currency. And this guy on the Lex Fridman podcast, he was just talking about how it was a measure against that, that it gave the individual Assyrian financial sovereignty, and that it was almost a tool in that way, you know?
Yeah, I've heard about people using it in disaster areas and things to create like local currencies. Which is an interesting way of going at it. But basically, until I can turn it into real money and spend it, it's not for me yet.
You could convert it. Like, my guy paid me my run in Bitcoin. It was easier for him and me.
It's such an arcane, long-winded process with so many long, arcane passwords. I feel like if I get a step wrong in trying to convert,
that's true,
Dogecoin into, you know, US dollars or something, if I might get one step wrong, I'm going to summon an archdemon or something.
not as much now. I mean, it's more like normie friendly now, but that definitely is how it used to be. I have memories of all sorts of encounters like that. Now it's relatively easy. I don't know. It's just what it is to me. It's less like the crypto technology itself that interests me. It's just the mass amount of people that are adapting new altcoins and starting their own economies and creating their own tokens. And, you know, like what this means on a wider level, it seems to be a pattern, of extreme decentralization. And it's interesting to watch that mechanism.
It's a market is being created for it by the intransigence and the controlling nature of the existing financial institutions. So you got cash, it's limited by physicality, but you can freely trade that with anybody, and you know, you can stuff it in a mattress under your bed, it's not going to appreciate in value or anything. But you know, physical cash is it's eminently usable in a way that Bitcoin isn't. But at the same time, we have the banks and the credit card companies increasingly using their influence to censor, to control, to deny people access to a bank account. So we're all already using electronic money, but it's not as useful as it should be. And so... these cryptocurrencies seem to be sort of filling in the gap for shady or semi-shady transactions or things that the banks don't like.
It's all shady. I mean, the way that money is made is shady. It's created out of debt. That's shady in its own right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the whole way that money has been handled in our economy through authoritarian rulers throughout history, that shady. So I think crypto is more visibly shady, you know. People are less shameless. I mean, they're more shameless about being shady. It's almost like a bragging right, like, hey, I'm gonna go shill my shit coin today. Rah, rah, you know, just shilling some shit coins. Hey, you know, that's it's like a people are being open about how shitty they are for the first time.
Whenever I get into a conversation with crypto bros, it reminds me of this party I went to in Docklands in London, where I was very drunk and surrounded by a lot of drug dealers. it has that same vibe, you know.
Oh man, I'm remembering this piece that I read about like some crypto conference that was like something out of Idiocracy, where there was like some guy who came out with like a giant like blockchain necklace with like a Bitcoin on it, like a gold chain, and it was like so over the top. You couldn't tell like how many layers of parody it was.
Oh. Parody or tragedy. So last time we talked was quite a while ago, and Grimes and Elon Musk had just broken up. Nerd power just couple no more.
Broken up, right. I mean, you have to wonder, like, how long was it really going to last? It just seemed like, you know, like, it just seemed like a one-off thing. I mean, that they, even the way the Grimes had, like, the baby with the number name. Like, yeah. That, it just seemed like a staged act for her to release a new album. It was all PR from the get-go. The whole thing was PR.
Performance art.
Yeah. I mean,
crassly commercial performance. But.
It's just, yeah. I mean, great Grimes, because she's still my style in 2011. She never credited me for merging transhumanism with the militant aesthetic and giving it a Lolita alien spin. She just went and did that. Like, never mentioned me. So yeah. Honestly, I fucking hate that bitch and what Elon did to her. She was asking, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to victim blame. I mean, what did Elon do to her? Did she leave him? Did he leave her? Like, I don't even know how to go back. I pay no attention to this.
I think she left him. I don't know. I don't pay that much attention to gossip. It's just, you know, him being a tech billionaire and her being a whatever she is.
An ASCII tech lord. Her being a prominent influencer.
Yeah.
He won. You can't. I mean, did you know any prominent influencers that are also ASCII tech lords? You know, like, it's hard to pull that off. Elon, he tries.
Yeah.
Not really working out for him.
No, he's just super awkward. That Saturday Night Live appearance was... it was something. I don't know what it was, but it was something.
Oh, man. I guess he set the Guinness World Record for being the first autistic to be on TV. I mean, like, ever. He broke that glass ceiling. I'm going to get on TV tomorrow because I have autism. I can feel it. It's coming.
I was listening.
I'm going on. They're putting me on tomorrow. I'm going to be like, hey, I got autism. Elon. They're going to be like, hey, be on our show, girl. Come on.
I was listening to your track, Autist, today, and that's a banger. I think that's my favorite track off that album.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it. I wrote it for all the autistics out there who wanted to do their own thing. You know, I never felt like I fit in with other autistic people because they were trying to assimilate, you know, and I wanted to do like an ASCII pride thing, kind of like Magneto, but like neurodiversity. So I wrote that song for all like the ASCII Magnetos out there.
Yeah. So they wanted to assimilate by fitting in. You wanted to assimilate like the Borg.
Yeah. Or like starting an ASCII super race, you know.
But you had a story or something about a friend of yours with opinions on Elon and Grimes?
Oh God. I don't know if she was my friend. I met her on Bumble BFF. So I met her on, it's like Bumble is a dating app for like upper middle class liberals, but it also has a BFF feature where you can make friends. So I started using it and I met this girl who really, really, really thinks that Elon is like the worst person ever to exist, like riches beyond the world, beyond reproach. He should be sharing his money with everybody and all he has done to all the girls he's been with, has been abusive and horrible all the time, and he should not have all that money. And I'm like, well, maybe like He should, because he's like Gatsby and he represents me, you know, as a weirdo. You know, maybe that's like our money. He's going to give it to us through Dogecoin. And yeah, but she hated that guy. She hated Elon. Like, it was like Elon derangement syndrome. I ain't never hated Elon like that. I don't think he's that great, but.
I think he's objectively too rich, I think.
I just think there's like a lot of Aspies that aren't rich, and there are a lot of rich people that aren't autistic. And I always do identity politics here. Like, give your money to goddess, you know?
Yeah. Of course, Grimes has been on social media ostentatiously reading the Communist Manifesto, so maybe that's the root of their divide.
was that photoshopped? Was it a meme or was there
No, well, I don't know whether she was actually reading it, but she was certainly posing with it for reals.
It's a new album coming out.
Divorce is the new redistribution of wealth because taxation ain't working.
It makes sense though that after their breakup, since he's the one with all the money, she'd be like reading the Communist Manifesto to stick it to him. It's like, sure. Like, if I'm dating a black guy and he like pisses me off, I'm gonna read like the KKK. You know, and like have people Photoshop it. That's me.
That man treated me so bad, I started reading the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
It's very. You don't see Jewish people in certain southern towns.
Yeah. It's very passive aggressive, though.
right. Oh man, these people are so like, why do we know about them? Do you ever ask yourself, like, why do we know about these people?
I mean, some of them. I mean, I think we probably should know about Elon and what he's up to, and you know, Grimes is a musician and performer, so it's kind of their job to be known of.
I have to stand for Elon because people hate him so much and he's a weirdo. Yeah. I automatically feel a connection to him because I'm a weirdo that's been like hated on. So I'm always going to be team Elon, like out of a self-preservation instinct.
And you're still holding out for some of those Spurg billions that he might send your way.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I want a lot of that. I mean, he can hit me up right now. he's not with Grimes anymore. Does he need like a ninth wife? Yeah, this chick was telling me that this girlfriend Bumble BFF, she's like, yeah, Grimes was like his number eight. Like, all right, maybe he doesn't want to settle down, you know? Maybe he's just like cruising.
I mean, yeah, he's very, very awkward and socially inept, but I haven't seen anything to suggest he's actually abusive or anything.
Well, it does challenge the stereotype that, like, you know, white autistic males on the internet are incels, considering like Grimes was his number eight. You know, maybe you know, he's smashing the incel stereotype.
Maybe he's smashing the femcels, that's what he's doing. He should just skip to the end and get a sex robot, then everything would be fine.
And that's for everything, really. That's like most things.
Yeah. Skip to the end, sex robot.
Skip to the end, sex robot.
So you encounter this person who has these views on a secondary use of a dating app. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot more people are using Bumble BFF now because the pandemic has made everybody lonely. And the regular Bumble isn't really a good app because it's just like the same type of people. They're all like hiking and doing yoga and, you know, like hashtag activists. They're all like upper middle class liberal types with the same personality. Like super whitewashed, you know, like pod people.
Yeah.
So you got to use the secondary feature.
Yeah, grown from liquidized lamb placenta in Ziploc bags somewhere.
The monolith has landed. Our escape is now.
Yeah, but they'd be fleeing the monolith.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's really, it's a sad app. I'll probably delete it tomorrow.
It's not a very good name, Bumble. But
you're going to get, like, stung by it.
I like actual bumblebees, but
literal bumblebees. But
you end up talking to someone on that app of all things, not even for its primary use, and that's when you encounter someone and you talk to them. And can you have a community of two? I guess so. Yeah. We were going to talk about the kind of fragmentation and polarization of the internet, and that is a prime sort of example, because you're wormed way down many layers deep in the internet and in an app, which is the mobile internet, which is a whole separate community, really, and that's where you're having your interactions with people.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bumble doesn't have a group messaging feature like Telegram or Discord or Signal. So it's not really being used in that way, like a digital autonomous organization. It's more just like randos trying to make friends and get likes. So I don't really see those kinds of apps lasting much longer, to be honest. Like with the way that everything has decentralized into these little hubs, I definitely see larger communities as people's dominant source of interaction now.
Yeah, so it's weird. We had this period where, you know, you had very few choices of how to communicate. It's email, web rings. Do you remember web rings?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe IRC. Yeah. And now there's this huge profusion of different options, but the landscape is completely dominated by Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all of which are becoming progressively more and more dystopian and controlling, much like the banks.
Well, and they're on their last leg. I mean, it's the old internet. It's going up in flames.
So what do you think's coming next then? What's if social media is web 2.0, what's web 3.0? Because it sure as fuck isn't Meta.
Well, everybody's trying to define it right now. Everybody's saying this is web 3, that's web 3. I mean, really, like crypto, tokenization, ownership, digital property rights, and the metaverse are like the buzzwords now. But how is Meta Web 3 if it was run by Zuckerberg of Web 2? People are kind of just making up Web 3 as they go along. Some of it's cool. Some of it reminds me of like the early 90s internet. Some of it, it's very renegade. It's very grassroots. And then some of it is obviously just, like, fake. so obviously fake. You know, you've got all sorts. But I think really, like, Web 3 is the collapse of Web 2 and, like, people trying to reorient. You know, the reorientation is Web 3. People are just, like, replacing the bricks of the digital world, you know, one by one. They're stacking them in new ways, like, through these communities. You know, it remains to be seen. We're at the very beginning of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing a load of people go back to older ways of interacting with the internet. I mean, the search engine, that's not going to go away, and you can't really get around that. So there's no need for things like web rings and so on anymore. You know, you will turn up in a Google search at some point, and someone will find your website. But the rest of it, the communities, we're not seeing a return to forums so much, but email lists have made a huge comeback because they're non-algorithmic, so they don't get fucked over by automated algorithms telling you, yeah, what you should see in what order rather than anything
else. I think that's good. It's kind of like zines. I loved zines, and I feel like some of the newsletters now, they have kind of zine energy. We are seeing more anarchy and, you know, more weirdness now. But I think like this time around, I'm a lot more jaded and I'm not as excited by it. Like, I imagine, like, if you're, like, 12 years old, you're having a really good time online right now. You know, like, there's, like, a 12-year-old that, like, made those whale NFTs, made, like, millions of dollars. You know, just a 12-year-old troll.
The whole NFT thing feels like a troll to me.
And it's just, like, somebody's conceptual art.
Yeah. All these guys losing their shit because someone else saved their avatar and used it. It's just like, well, what did you think was going to happen?
Digital property rights. It's because everything is disappearing in real life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're entering a stage of dematerialization, and therefore digital property is beginning to get revalued because things are disappearing. I mean, like, nobody really owns music anymore. Nobody owns media. People are going to this Marie Kondo minimalism. So I think digital property is kind of it's more lucrative now. You know, like, nobody can afford to buy a house in New York, but you can go and buy some digital land, you know, some shit coins, or, you know, some non-shit coins. I don't know, like, what's the, I have to do a list of, like, all the altcoins and all the shit coins and, you know, like, decide where alt ends and shit begins.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very blurry line.
It's like, you wanted this, but not like that.
In the words of Johnny Rotten, this is what you want, this is what you get.
Right. It's like Transmetropolitan, but without the glamour.
Well, Warren used to be the king of the email newsletter with Bad Signal and the other couple of things he did before he got cancelled.
Internet weirdos like Warren and Grant Morrison, who predicted the digital autonomous organizations when he came up with the Cells and the Invisibles comic book. He called them Cells. And cells were groups of autonomous individuals, you know, like acting on their own sovereignty, you know, and forming their own micro governments. That's like what a DAO is now. That's, you know, what these digital communities are. He saw that coming, that people were going to fracture and separate from the mainframe.
The trouble
they're visionary, you know, futurist in a way.
Yeah, definitely. That kind of tradition goes back to Alan Moore, I think, with the way that he thinks about and approaches comics. It's weird that comics is the medium that's it's been so effective at that. What I'm worried about is that, yeah, everyone is fracturing off into their own little groups that only interact with other people with similar beliefs and outlooks. I mean, it's hard work to interact with and stay in touch with people you don't agree with, because everyone is very trigger happy on the block button. And then if that's not what the issue is, then everyone's divided out in all of these little email groups or Discord groups or other obscure corners of the internet, like fucking Bumble. And that's...
Which isn't even like a node, really.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gonna last. I mean, I just don't see something like that lasting. It's just, it's very specific for like a very specific type of person. You know, like if you're not, I was talking to my friends about this, that if you're not like in a fancy urban city, like Bumble is actually good for you, because if you're on OkCupid, you're going to meet like some really disgusting people. So if you're not like in a city that's too affluent, you can actually meet cool people in Bumble.
Yeah.
Because they're the only ones that are like, that have teeth, you know, and they don't have alcohol problems.
Yeah. What frustrates me and has done, because I've been online pretty much as long as it's been available to me, is this fear that people have of new communications technology. And you see it every time with every new technology. Like, oh, that, it's not natural. People aren't communicating authentically with each other. Well, everyone's just staring at their phone. Yeah, I'm staring at my phone because I'm on a train. I don't know anybody. And through my phone, you know, I'm in touch with the world.
I'm thinking of that comic where these guys are all reading a newspaper at the same time.
Yeah.
Talking about how they don't know why everybody's always on their phones.
Yeah, yeah. You want to talk about what's natural and unnatural? Look, language is unnatural. It's a technology, right? If you want purely natural communication, you're pretty much limited to grunting and pointing.
You know, a lot of these like naturalist people are just fetishists of the banal. Like, they just like things really dull.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what they're into. Yeah.
Which would be fine, like most things, if they didn't try to impose it on everybody else.
And if they didn't have any say in the creation of the majority of things, because they water down aesthetics and, you know, take the life out of everything, so they're like cultural vampires, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the flip side. So on the one hand, I'm worried, deeply worried about all these little cubby holes in the internet becoming sort of self-radicalizing almost.
Well, we're already there.
Yeah, we are. So I guess not worried so much as panicked. Yes, panicked. That's a step up from worried about what's going on. But the flip side of that, is that these microcultures do create interesting stuff, right?
Exactly. You have both. I mean, there's no doubt that we've disconnected from each other in a way that is not healthy as a society. We have a lot more echo chambers. We have a lot more just subcultures, and a lot of it is just like pure insanity. You can't make sense of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you've got to, like anything else, you've got to weed through the bad stuff to get to the good stuff. And when you find the good stuff, it's really good. But you definitely, it doesn't just like appear unless you have a good curator. You need somebody to curate from you. Otherwise, you're just delving straight into like an underground market of crazies. You know? It's the equivalent of like going to downtown LA on a Friday night.
And there aren't youth subcultures anymore. Right? The way in which these kids today, interact with.
I think you're wrong, though. It's just that they don't dress up.
Maybe.
And listen to the same music. They just go on like Discord and like do their like slang and, you know, the memes.
It's just like they don't seem to be particularly innovating a great deal. They just seem to be picking over the past,
trading stocks, you know. That they're doing GameStop shit.
Yeah,
it's all about the money.
But culturally, it makes me think of those, you know, sad lingering shots they have of, you know, Indian children in some slum of Delhi or something picking over a trash heap. It's just, oh, here's something shiny that I can resell, you know. And the closest thing we have to a new radical subculture is a bunch of fucking boomers who think Hillary Clinton drinks children's blood.
QAnon, the last subculture in America. Wait, she doesn't drink children's blood? That's news to me.
No, I think she takes it intravenously.
Okay, I mean, she definitely takes something.
fact check. Hillary Clinton does not drink children's blood. She injects it between her toes.
Target me now. You know, like, Hillary, I'm on your side because we're like feminists, right?
Yes.
She did destroy feminism, though. I mean, you can't go in as a feminist and come out as a Hillary supporter unless you weren't really very much of a feminist to begin with. So now you've got like all these feminists that are like hard anti-feminist because Hillary came in and like fucked around.
So kind of like Margaret Thatcher was for feminism over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there was there was this narrative in 70s and 80s feminism for quite a bit that, you know, women would make better leaders because they would, yeah, they would be more diplomatic, you know. Yeah.
Hashtag girl boss. Yeah. Save the world from harsh male energy. Demasculate your team.
And then in came Margaret Thatcher, wiped out huge sections of the welfare state, started a stupid, pointless war to win votes. You know,
But if you criticize her, you're like some kind of misogynist.
Well, no, you can get away with criticizing Thatcher, even though she was a woman.
Can you really?
Yeah, feminists disowned her and said she wasn't a woman. So
I don't know. I mean, like she accomplished a lot for like a woman doing politics.
True, she did wreck a lot of shit.
Would she have wrecked as much if she was a dude?
I'm trying to think what other major conservative politicians there were around at the time. Yeah, there were ones just as bad as her, though they kind of rode her coattails. I don't know whether they'd have had the same cult of personality.
Honestly, they're all evil. Thatcher, Hillary, they're all evil. We should just like admit that.
Yeah, maybe
we don't have that high level Machiavellianism. But like we're not at their level.
Maybe it's just the power and the system that turns people horrible.
The system, what, like as a noun? The system is like its own entity, like Cthulhu? Yeah,
kind of. I mean, corporations are their own separate entity. They're not really in control of anybody who's a part of them.
So they're like a cult technology?
Yeah, they're a eusocial hive mind.
The machine of modern capitalism.
Yeah. I mean, well,
I think it's just man's inhumanity to man. I never agreed with that take, that capitalism was like an entity within itself. I just think that man is inhumane to man. It's more like a Hobbesian nightmare.
Yeah, I think it's an expression of some of our best and some of our worst tendencies, like all ideologies tend to be.
Very, very nuanced take, sir.
That's me, Captain Centrist.
Captain of the center team.
This is not a time and age for nuance, unfortunately.
Unless you're an artist, you can be abstract and subtle, but you can't spill anything out. You've got to do like references.
So, bringing some of these subjects together a bit. So we talked about how the financial institutions are dicking people around, and thereby creating the financial environmental niche into which all these coins, cryptocurrencies and NFTs and all of that are springing up. You know, whether they're elaborate trolls, rip-offs, Ponzi schemes or whatever, doesn't really matter. You know, it's the oppression of a few banks and a few payment processors really that is leading. It's creating the niche for these things. Is what's happening to the surface level internet similarly creating a market and a niche for these alternative social platforms or these alternative communication platforms? I mean, there are some communication platforms like Hive and so on that use blockchain to be essentially uncensorable, though.
Yeah.
They're not particularly user friendly. You know, is that a way around it? Perhaps.
I think it is definitely a way around it. It's a reaction to it. It's also like a new replacement for it. Like we're gonna get rid of this old thing, bring this new thing in. So we're kind of seeing a realignment, a regrouping. And yeah, I think it's a part of the same thing. The cryptocurrency communities and the random Telegram groups, and it's all a part of a great movement away from the center, from the core. We're seeing a social unraveling of epic proportions.
A rejection of the status quo, but it's like a piecemeal revolution with everyone heading off in different directions.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
it's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's no escape from the system unless you collectivize, but most people don't.
You take the red pill and you end up in someone's alternative matrix. And then you take the red pill there and then you're in an alt-alt matrix. Well, and then you're in an alt-alt-alt matrix. And it's just more alts and more meta matrixes and different layers and levels.
Yeah. I mean, what is the point of escaping the Twitter matrix? I need to end up in the Gab matrix, which is in many ways worse.
Right. I mean, why escape the, you know, Facebook just to go and like somebody's channel? I mean, it's like more independent control would be the main reason. I think the people that are going to like big players, Telegrams and Discords, are kind of, you know, missing the point. But I do think that mass corporations are going to be adapting Telegram and Discord on a mass scale. And I think that that's inevitable, that you're going to see the big players adapting crypto technology. And, you know, like, that's just the way that it works. You know, like one portion of society adopts a technology, they make it accessible. After a certain point, everybody gets a hold of it, and then it's used for sinister purposes. So, I mean, expect the worst, expect the best too, though. You know, like, expect everything. Don't be surprised. Always be ready.
Yeah. I mean, the repression cycle is getting quicker and quicker. Like, Discord used to be the Wild West, but then within a few months of it really getting popular, there were the crackdowns and a bunch of channels getting deleted. Yeah, and some of them were truly obnoxious or horrible and probably probably deserved.
It always seems like the canary in the coal mines are like sex workers or white nationalists.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, I work with people who work in porn now, and new sites and things that are popping up and then being slapped down by payment processors and going under at such a fantastic rate, it's impossible to keep up.
Yeah, I feel like sex workers were the original cancel culture victims.
Yeah.
They were canceled first. Sex workers have been getting canceled for a long time.
Do you think that this fragmentation and sort of self-selected community thing is going to bleed over into meat space, into real life?
Yes. I think that's happening now because you can go to NFT parties. There was NFT in New York City. And most people that go out in real life, IRL, the normie sphere, the mainframe, you know, like whatever that is, are dumb, and they think I'm crazy. We don't understand each other. Like somebody needs to have at least a little bit of like internet blood for me to even be able to interface with them now, like at all. Like my brain is fried by the digital, you know, medium. I can't like talk to regular people. So yeah, of course. I mean, like nerds are gonna unite in real life, you know, like just like we did then. We're going to continue to do it now. We had LAN parties and, you know, people met on ICQ and then started their own projects and companies. And, you know, here we are.
I have a hard time interfacing with normal people as well. But I think a lot of people have had a taste of that experience by being shut in for a year and a half.
Yeah. We were more selective before we were forced to stay indoors and not do anything. And we were able to be with people of like mind, and there were clubs and coffee shops. and, you know, creative spaces, and everything shut down, and people just try to talk to regular everyday types. I feel like I have become more empathetic, though, and it's easier for me to talk about mundane things that I would have seen as trivial.
Yeah.
You know, I guess because I had to. I had to learn. But I'd rather not do it if I didn't. You just have to, like, ask people questions like, what's your favorite thing you did today?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that thing you like.
That's what I'm no good at. Yeah. I'm lacking a small talk module somewhere.
That's probably for the better. I mean, you should just be able to turn it on anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they'll talk to me and say, "Oh, did you watch such and such new series on Netflix?" And I'm like, "No, I was too busy thinking about the heat death of the universe."
I like that.
And that is where the conversation usually stops.
Right. Conversation stops here.
But, yeah, are we going to see communes spring up? How long till the first NFT Jonestown, do you think?
Oh, I think the algorithms are going to hit it if you put those two words in the description. That's it. You're famous. You're famous, James. You made it. Oh, man. Oh, man. I wanted to do a joke as a comedian. And it was going to be like, so they used to call me the meme queen, but it never really caught on.
Very droll. Sorry, like, very droll.
Yeah. Fucking viral content. I mean, how hard can it really be to find the most popular words and phrases and regurgitate them for a bunch of morons?
Yeah. I think a lot of it is also timing, just like in comedy in general. So I think certain memes are of their moment and of their time. And if you removed them from that context, they never would have taken off.
Yeah, memes are fascinating to watch in various ways, especially when you consider that a meme in its original incarnation was just a unit of cultural information that was being transmitted from one entity to another. So, I mean, there's this guy, Meme Analysis, that I did a talk with. He analyzes the anthropology of memes. Mm. It's an interesting kind of sociological outlook on meme culture.
People are taking it that seriously. I don't know whether to be delighted or appalled.
I think it's nice that he's looking at it in a serious way, because people don't take stuff seriously, especially not memes. And here is just like some random outsider who comes in and decides to give it a serious, you know, deep dive.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cool.
Digital anthropology.
Yeah, I think the people that are like so uncool become cool. In a lot of ways, it's like the time for the ultra nerds to become, you know, like the new influencers. And I like that. I think, you know, people that have a voice today might not have 20 years ago. Like, there are some weirdos now. You know, like, you can subscribe to their channels, like you and me, for example. Weirdos, subscribe.
But we don't fit even amongst the weirdos.
The weirdos of the weirdos.
Yeah, exactly. Outcasts amongst outcasts.
Oh my god, you're listening to my music.
Yeah.
It's my track. Blacklist. It's still relevant. I wrote it like 8 years ago, and then it's the same thing in a new generation.
Yeah. Where will it all end?
will it end? Or are we at the beginning? Find out next on Apocalypse 1, 2, 3. This is reminding me of that movie Southland Tales that I saw the other night. It was like this dystopian movie where everything is just collapsing in every direction. There's like war and riots and mass climate apocalypse, and there's just like freaks running around. It's a good dystopia. It's like a dystopia cocktail. It's very, it's a guilty pleasure. It's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie.
Yeah. Dystopia Cocktail. One part biodiesel, two parts rubbing alcohol.
You know what? We should NFT that. We'll have different flavors of the cocktails in pixels.
Completely worthless.
Web3, here we come.
Okay. Well, I think that's actually a good point to bring us for a close for today. But we're going to try and make this more regular again.
Right.
So join us next time, cats and kittens.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Grimm's Tales. Music by Casket Bound.